The Psychedologist.
Hello, this is your psychedologist speaking. Great to have you here today, hearing this awesome conversation with Ariel Vagozin. Ariel is a professional gender inclusivity trainer, workshop facilitator, writer, educator, mentor, performance artist, and consultant. They founded Gender Illumination and have been teaching and facilitating workshops for coming on 2 decades now, retreats all over the world, US and international. And they have facilitated gender inclusivity trainings for such places as major tech companies, major policy institutes. Ariel is an ordained Hebrew priestess and ritualist, and along with gender justice, their work focuses on intersectionality, commitment to working from an anti-oppression lens, and creating communities across diverse cultural backgrounds. This is a super funny and neat episode where we go into gender as a racialized experience, and gender in Judaism, the history of the word queer and what queer means to Ariel, psychedelic privilege we talk about addiction in the queer community, and then finally, of most importance, I hope to you, definitely to me, is bringing some light onto the Queer Dome. Queer Dome is going to be at Burning Man this summer, 2019, and they need volunteers. They need donations. And so there's information in the episode about how to donate. But if you want to do it right now or to learn more, you can go to gofundme.com/queerdome. And there you can find the link for the application as well as info on what they're doing and why they're doing it and why you should support it. So enjoy this episode, and I will see you on the other side. All right, you ready?
I feel very ready.
Okay, me too.
Oh, do you get to say my last name when you do it? Do you know how to say my last name?
I might know how to. Vagozin?
There's no R. It's just Vagozin.
Vagozin, okay. Is there an R in the spelling of it?
No. Yeah, so my name is Ariel, and then my last name is V like Victor, Egosen.
Cool. Oh, you have ego in your last name.
Oh, yeah. That's funny. I never thought about that.
And Gosen.
Yeah, there's a lot of jokes about it. Like, you could be like, yeah, like, it's just funny. It's like, we go soon, like, the go soon.
Oh, no. Well, my last name is Friedman, but it's F-R-I-E-D, so people always called me, okay, Fried Man, let's go Fried Man. And so
it's so funny.
Yeah, it is. And well, and what's funny too is that that always made me insecure. And then I met this woman named, and she was on my podcast too, C. Glassman. And so she calls herself C. Glasswoman.
Ooh.
And so I want to change my last name to Freedwoman, and that just changes it entirely for me.
That is so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to do that.
I wonder the origin of your last name.
Yeah, well, I just did one of those ancestry tests where you spit in the tube. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, and then what did you find out?
I am 33% Eastern European Jewish. Mm-hmm. And 29% Irish Scottish, and 22% English, French, Wales, and it was all Europe stuff. And I knew that too because both my mom and dad's side, you know, our relatives came over fairly recently.
Cool.
Yeah, but anyway, let's talk about you. Welcome to The Psychedologist. Yay, there you are, you're there. How are you today?
I feel so good. Today is an awesome day. Things have been really great. Just had a fun birthday celebration fairly recently for my birthday. So it's been a really great and fun time recently.
Sweet. Do you live in the Bay Area?
Yes, I live in Berkeley, California, and I run 2 different organizations from this location.
What are those?
So I am the founder and director of a nonprofit called Gender Illumination, 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 Shining Light on Gender. And we are a nonprofit that focuses on creating healing, ritual, social justice for trans and non-binary people. It looks like healing, ritual, leadership, and mentorship. And we offer a lot of different programs that really help and raise up the trans and non-binary community. And people can find out about that at genderillumination.com. And it's been such an amazing honor to really do this work and to see my community grow and see us building our relationships with each other and building support within each other and helping each other to shine. Which brings me to the other organization I run, which is actually called Shine. And Shine is a business focused on creating clear pathways to inclusion and diversity. And so the work of Shine is that we teach trainings, we do consulting, policy writing, and curriculum writing focused on inclusivity and diversity with a specific lens of inclusivity for the LGBTQ community. And we do this in corporations, places of faith, schools, universities, summer camps, and healthcare providers.
Wow. I love that you're giving person-to-person support, and then you're also giving the support for institutions to better support individuals. That's like a multi-sided approach, right? To like making the world more inclusive and accessible.
Exactly. That's the exact vision, is how do you help the community from within, as well as really give a space for us to be able to be in the rest of society, because there's so much violence that trans community is facing right now, and there's so much oppression, and there's also so much workplace discrimination. So the work really needs to be twofold. It needs to be giving people in the trans and non-binary community tools, leadership tools, healing tools, mentorship, ritual, a chance to celebrate, a place to grieve. And it's also about giving people that are not a part of our community the tools to be actually inclusive and welcoming, and to gain the gift of having us be part of society, and to gain the gifts of diversity. And also what we're doing is giving all people the chance to explore their own gender identity and to broaden the boxes that we've been given, broaden the definitions of the many gender boxes that we've been given, to really give people the space to explore their human potential and to see that gender liberation benefits all of us, everybody, whatever category you feel like you're a part of. Gender liberation is something that will benefit the entire society.
I want to ask if there's a story or a moment when you remember that you needed to create, or you realized you needed to create one or both of these things. Like, do you recall how the idea formed, or was there an aha moment? Did it happen over time?
Oh, totally. So my identity is I am a non-binary person. I identify as genderqueer. And living in this identity means that it means that I have to pay attention to what's happening in society, to how people perceive me, how people interact with me because of my gender identity. And I also see and have seen since childhood a real stifling of people based on gender and gender identity. And I see how that stifling has really harmed people. And I see that it harms people in two ways. One is it's limiting people's ability to do various different activities. It limits people's human potential, and it also harms people because it's creating division and oppression and harm and hatred instead of love and light. And so the whole essence of what I'm doing with Shine is bringing that light to everyone, is bringing people an opportunity to reimagine the world, to re-understand what is possible, to reshape what's possible, and doing this in every setting, right? Doing this in a workplace setting, in a corporation, in your place of faith, in your church, in your synagogue, in your mosque, in your temple, in your summer camps, in your schools, in your universities, in with healthcare providers. So really shifting everything and giving people unique opportunities. And I'm doing this from an experiential education perspective. So my background, I've spent 18 years as an educator and as an experiential educator. Mm. So launching this business was this very natural fit, coming from this whole experience of being a facilitator and an educator, and coming from this background of experiential education, which means it's embodied, it's hands-on. You're actually, as you're learning, you're doing the thing that you're learning, which creates a visceral experience for people that people oftentimes will remember more than if I just stand up and give you a lecture. When you actually experience inclusivity, diversity, when you actually experience what this feels like, it shifts you and changes you. And so for me, doing this work, it was the next natural step in my progression of all the education that I'd already been doing for 18 years. And if people look at shinediversity.com, they can see the full breadth of the work that we're doing.
Nice. Yeah, your presentation, your talk at Queering Psychedelics was so amazing for me. And all, I think all the people around me, it was contagious. The whole audience like dropped in, I think, in a way that people hadn't necessarily during the conference yet, because you got us moving, right? You had us stand up and do a visualization, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was really powerful to be with everyone in that room. And I knew my presentation was going to be unique because I knew that other people were going to just stand behind the podium and do a very, you know, do lecture style presentation with a PowerPoint. And there's something beneficial to that too. For me personally, my style of education is about people having an embodied experience. So when I was on that stage, it was very important for me to take center stage and to gift you all the experience of feeling in your body what I was talking about.
Yeah. Mission accomplished, at least for me. Well, and I want to shout out to Kevon, who also shook things up with his performance and presentation.
Yes, his performance was amazing. It was so beautiful to hear him sing and so powerful. And his perspective is so important. I really think that, to me, whenever I talk about gender, I also think it's very important to talk about the experience of race and the fact that gender is also a racialized experience. And so I really appreciated his presentation and the nuance of talking about all of it, race, gender, how that impacts a psychedelic experience. So I really loved how he opened the day, and then I got to jump in with the next piece of it. I felt like our presentations were very connected to each other and very synchronistic.
Yeah, definitely. That was, yeah, absolutely. How is gender a racialized concept?
So the way we structured race in our society is that every experience is actually a racialized experience, because we've, especially in the U.S., I think this is true internationally, and especially in the U.S. in terms of how we have structured race and created such an intense institutionalized racist system, it's impossible to separate out identities, right? You everything is your embodied experience. You're living both your race and your gender identity. So a lot of people will talk about intersectionality. And one way to just visualize that is if you're imagining being on a street corner, right? There's like an intersection. There's that moment where two things come together. So a person's race and a person's gender are it's connected, right? This is one intersection. So a person of color and a person who is trans is experiencing multiple levels of oppression, right? And we all know that people who are experiencing the highest rate of oppression in our country today are trans women of color, specifically Black trans women. And so they are experiencing both violence because of their trans identity, violence because of their identity as a woman, violence because of their identity as a Black person. And that is an important thing to talk about, to take the whole thing into consideration, to understand that this is multiple identities that one person has, and therefore they are experiencing multiple levels of oppression. And how do we talk about that in society? And what are we doing? And what are we doing to shift so that the most marginalized people in our country can have a chance to shine, a chance to survive, a chance to thrive, a chance to overcome this intense hatred and institutionalized racism, bigotry, prejudice that people have been experiencing. And the thing about it being institutionalized means it's not just at a level of someone saying a racial slur or somebody just getting beat up in the street. It's like, it's actually at every level of our government. So it's generationally going back. It's how you can actually see how white people were given all kinds of privileges, ranging from, you know, going back in time to thinking about segregation, to thinking about then how when that ended, there was still, you know, redlining of neighborhoods so that white people were given access to certain neighborhoods that people of color literally weren't given access to. So as generational wealth, as these things are passed down, you have a problem like on a systemic level. So to me, it's like you can't talk about gender without talking about race. And also people perceive gender differently amongst different race categories. So people perceive gender maps onto race differently. And everybody's gender is actually the experience of race is connected to how people will perceive you. And people have different expectations for how different genders work in the context of race. And also there's an additional thing around culture, which is that different cultures are doing gender differently. And the binary system that the U.S. is currently, the dominant culture in the U.S. is this very binary system, which to me is a false system. It's an inaccurate system, but it's a system that the U.S. is working with right now. And this binary system has not always been what's true on this land. If you look at indigenous cultures on this land, they did not have this binary system. So it's important to also talk about colonialization, and it's important to talk about how one culture has destroyed another culture and therefore also shifted the entire gender landscape on this actual land that we live on. And even in my own culture, I come from a Jewish background, and in my own culture, if you look at our ancient sacred texts, there's actually six genders that are written about. So even in my own tradition, I can look and see that there was not ever just two genders. There was always more than that, and a conversation that existed beyond two genders. So I think there's also something important to talk about the way culture has impacted gender and how dominant culture impacts the gender narrative that we're living in.
Wow, I had no idea that Judaism had six genders. Can you break that down in a few minutes at all?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I definitely can. So there are six genders that are talked about in the Talmud. So something that I think is important to understand is that the six genders talked about in the Talmud, my belief around that is like it's important to understand that the Talmud is rabbinical text that's written by cisgendered men. So yes, they are mentioning the six genders. It's still an imperfect system, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think of it a lot today, kind of how there's a lot of mapping of identities forced onto people versus the people in those identities declaring and creating their own language, right? So a lot of people will ask me this question of, oh, when did you come out? Or did you know when you were a kid that you were non-binary or genderqueer? And my response to that is, when I was a kid, this language literally did not exist. Even 10 years ago, the words that I used to describe myself literally didn't exist. That doesn't mean that I didn't have this identity. It means that there was no way for me to self-express. Something really powerful happens when I get to declare my own identity and put it into my own words versus someone who's not my identity forcing something onto me and telling me what language I can or can't use to describe my body, right? Mm-hmm. So I think when you go back to ancient times, yes, it's very powerful to know that there were six genders that were written about. And I also want to say that I think that those genders were written about by people that weren't the people living those gender identities. Mm-hmm. So I still think it's important to mention that, right? Because there's a lot of power in finding this. For me, I found a lot of power in finding these texts, like literally studying the Talmud, going in and seeing, wow, here they are. Like here are the six, they're written down and they have a description and they have rules around them. And that means we've always existed, right? So there's a part of me that's like, here's the proof that, you know, I could go back thousands of years, like this 3,000-year-old tradition, and show you that we've always existed. But sadly, I think it also shows that there's always been this level of oppression and dominance, right? Because I'm not reading it from the perspective of those people. I'm reading about those people from the dominant culture's perspective. So I do think it's important to also just name that as well, that it's not like, wow, we're finding these texts and the texts are written by gender non-binary people. It's like finding these texts about people that were, you know, somehow that I feel like are connected to the identity that I inhabit now, but I don't feel like my voice is fully there because I still feel like it's being written by a cis man's perspective of what my identity might have been 3,000 years ago. Mm-mm. So that's the complication there. So there's power in it and empowerment in it, and there's also complications to it. And it's still very exciting, right? It's still like, here we are, we've always existed. This is something that we can lean into and talk about and bring out.
Right. Yeah. And talk about how next time it can be different. And you know, we are all creating our own narratives, the narratives for the future, even of what you can be and beyond. And there's not going to be a limit this time or like a discrete categories that people have to fit into, hopefully.
100%. I think that there are as many genders as there are people. And I think this is the time, we're in the time right now in history, we are really in this time frame of people being able to own and claim and declare their own identities and declare the words that work for us. So for me, the words non-binary and genderqueer, this is working for me. I'm owning this identity. I'm claiming this. This is my own declaration of myself. And that's very empowering. And I think it's very powerful for people, no matter what background you are, to be able to say what's true for you. So I'm not going to place a gender identity onto you. I'm not going to place a cultural identity onto you. I'm going to ask and find out, what are your pronouns? What is the background? What are you? Where are you coming from? So that I understand before just looking at you and making any kind of an assumption. I think that's one of the biggest problems in our culture today, is that people make all kinds of assumptions about each other, about gender, about identity, rather than actually getting to know someone and hearing what works for them and calling them the correct name and the correct pronoun and showing them dignity and respect and honoring.
Right.
So a lot of my work is actually teaching people how to do that. The vast majority of the work that I do with Shine is giving people the tools to show people respect and dignity.
I want to ask you a question about like queerness, but first I want to say that I think that the way we raise our children is something so critical to look at. And, you know, I'm fortunate to live in a community where the children are being raised with no presumptions about what their gender is. And, you know, if like there's a comment of like, well, boys don't wear that, it's like, well, first of all, like, we don't know the child's gender yet because they haven't told us. And there's no such thing as boys and girls do this or that, because we all are human and we all can do whatever we want as long as it doesn't hurt other people.
That is so awesome that you have that community. That's such a gift.
Yeah.
Really great.
So I was wondering if you find yourself teaching people about what queer is or means, because I wonder if anyone listening is asking themselves that right now.
Yeah, this is what I do all the time. I get to teach people what queer means. So I can give a very quick description here, which is queer. So queer is a really amazing word in the sense that over time it has really shifted. The use of it has shifted. If you were to ask my parents and their generation, their feeling of the word queer, they have a lot of negative connotations and memories of it because it was used as a negative slang against people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual. This term was thrown out as a slur, as a negative slur. And we have really reclaimed it as a positive. And there's queer studies in universities. And the word queer itself, when you look it up in the dictionary, means the other. And so for me, why have I claimed that word is that I feel like there's a lot of power in being a minority. There's a lot of power in being the other, because you have a unique gift of being on the edge of society. And even when you study permaculture, it's the edge species that are bringing newness to the garden. If you need those species to actually bring new life and bring new ideas. So when I think of myself as being the other, I don't think of that as a negative, right? That to me is like, it's not a slur. This is not a negative word. This is actually a really powerful, positive word that, yes, I actually am not trying to be just like everyone else. I think there was like some myth that was started, like, you know, about people really desiring for everyone to be the same, and as if that sameness therefore means we all deserve rights. And to me, it's like every human is different and every human deserves rights because all living beings deserve and have rights inherently, right? Like we already have them. It is what's real. So to me, being the other is not a negative experience. It's actually a positive experience. I'm bringing the gifts of wisdom of what does it mean to be on the edge of a society. And to me, queerness gives me this gift of being in a liberation movement, right? So for me, my liberation is bound up with everyone else's. So this is about, you know, creating a space where everyone in the whole LGBTQIA community would be seen and have rights and be protected, and that would exist. And also that is true for any marginalized population of people, people of color, people with disabilities. Anyone that's on the margins knows and understands what it means to have been othered at some point in society and knows why it's important to take a stand for those experiencing injustice. So my queer identity actually helps me look out and see that what people are doing right now in terms of families being separated at the border, that to me is so obviously wrong and obviously needs to be stopped. And part of that is because I have an identity of what does it mean to be othered. So when I see people being harmed and being called the other, I immediately feel a connection and want to help those people.
And how do you infuse this with your advocacy in the psychedelic movement?
Yes, great question. So I'm so glad. I know it's like, here we go, get into the psychedelics, the juiciness. So first of all, you know, there's so much to be said around psychedelics. I think there's a lot of liberation that can be found in psychedelics. I'm really intrigued by the studies that are happening right now in terms of MDMA as a way to cure post-traumatic stress disorder, psilocybin being used as a potential way to help heal depression. And I'm saying that I don't think there's an exact cure for depression, but I think it can help in the healing of. And I have seen people's stories and heard people's stories about how psychedelics have been used to really, in an appropriate therapeutic session and sessions being used to really benefit and help and heal them and heal. And this healing, you know, people who are in oppressed communities, people who are marginalized, we need healing, right? We have experienced a lot of trauma and a lot of pain, and the pain of oppression and the trauma that happens when you're in a marginalized group. It's both post-traumatic and it's also current trauma that people need to heal from. Mm-hmm. And I really want to make sure that marginalized communities, LGBTQIA, people of color, have access to these healing modalities. And when I think about psychedelics, my you know, the lecture that I was giving at Queering Psychedelics was all about this concept of psychedelic privilege. And that's a term that I coined. And I coined this term because I think there's no way to just talk about psychedelics without acknowledging that psychedelic privilege is already happening. And so what psychedelic privilege is who's being given access to these resources? Who's going to be first to get access to this very important healing modality? How can we make sure that people that are on the margins get access to this modality? Because we already know in society, right? There's nothing new about the concept of privilege. We already know in society that certain groups are privileged, that white people, wealthy people, Christian people, people who were assigned male at birth who still identify that way, cisgendered men, are given privilege in our society. And we see how that privilege plays out. It means they will be given access first. Mm-hmm. So when I'm witnessing a psychedelic movement that is coming forth and showcasing and doing the actual scientific research to prove that in a therapeutic setting that these medicines can actually heal, I'm constantly paying attention to who will get access to that healing and how can I make sure that the most marginalized get access to that healing. And when the most marginalized come to therapists for that healing, how can we make sure that therapists are trained to interact with marginalized communities? Right. So a lot of queer people specifically have been through lots of trauma when it comes to how psychologists and therapists have looked at our community in the past. Right. So it's not that long ago that it was literally illegal to be lesbian or gay, or that it was in, you know, written in the DSM as a psychological disorder, which we now know is not true. And there's still this issue around transness, around being labeled in a negative way or labeled as a disorder, when it's like, this is not a disorder. This is who people are. There's nothing wrong with this. There's no shame. There's nothing problematic about this. But I can see that our community has a lot of fear of going to a therapist or going to a place for healing because of all the trauma that we've experienced in the past and because of how we've been medicalized and because of what the medical institution has said about our community or how they've harmed our community. As we approach the concept of psychedelic healing, my main goal is to make sure that therapists know how to interact with our community, know how to do this from a place, again, of honoring dignity and respect. And part of my work in SHINE is I want to be doing this work with therapists. We've already been doing this work with healthcare providers, and I feel like the next step is bringing these kinds of trainings to therapists that are doing psychedelic therapy and making sure that therapists have training of what does it mean to work with the LGBTQIA community? What does it mean to work with any marginalized population of community? How can we make sure that therapists know, you know, how best to communicate with people around pronouns, around gender, around queerness? And this is something that people do need training in. It's not necessarily something that you would know if you haven't been to a training. And part of why I want to offer these trainings is to give people the tools and the resources that they need so that the people who are the most marginalized can access this healing.
Yeah. I mean, I got my undergrad in psychology and my master's in clinical psychology, and we learned about counseling, and there was never anything. So it's not like I didn't complete everything that I would need to get a license. So I'm sure that it probably would have touched on this at some point, but there is nothing about sex and sexuality, nothing about gender, nothing about race, and nothing about in my entire education, from like public school, you know, preschool through high school, and then two colleges, nothing about Indigenous people at all. I mean, it was actually an awakening to me to learn that there are still Indigenous people like thriving and fighting against colonization and the traces of that, the impact of that today. This was like, I learned about that in my permaculture course. And was like blessed to become friends with someone who's on the front lines of that work, who like schooled me and taught me so much. So I think that it should be in every like educational program. Every school should have a gay straight alliance or similar, et cetera. And, just that there's so many ways I think for us to bridge the gap that won't even be that hard to do, because there are people everywhere that I think can relate to feeling othered, and it's just going to be easy. It's like, it's going to be a cascade effect, I think, and you're on the front lines of it, and that's amazing.
Definitely. I think it's so important that this gets into every school. And I also think when I'm talking about psychedelic privilege, that's just, I've only shared one little piece of it with you, right? So it's about who has access. It's also about where, you know, a lot of psychedelic medicines originate in Indigenous culture, and there's been a real appropriation or a real way that people want, you know, white people want access to these medicines without giving any thought as to where they came from or whose culture are they borrowing or taking from. And are you actually standing in solidarity with an Indigenous community? Are you paying a land tax to Indigenous community? Are you, you know, giving thanks and gratitude to the land that we live on? Do you understand where these plants have come from? And if you don't, then you really need to pause before you start taking these psychedelics and think about where these came from, what is the actual medicine, and whose stories are these plants? That the plants, you know, are connected to the people and to these stories. And I think it's so important that people understand the impact of colonialization and talk about that when we talk about psychedelics, and talk about how culture, especially white supremacy has impacted the psychedelic experience and the experience of Indigenous people when it comes to their own ability to even access their medicines, right? So another piece of psychedelic privilege is who will face the most harm. You know, these substances are still illegal, and as we struggle for legality, you know, there is a difference. If a white person is arrested versus a black person versus an Indigenous person, like, these are different experiences. And we know this. We see how police officers treat people of color. So we know that there will be a difference. And it's important to talk about that, because when something is illegal and you want an experience of healing, what does that mean if you're a person of color? What is the fear that you're carrying, the very valid and real fear around how a police officer might engage with you or interact with you? What does that mean about if you will or will not have this opportunity to use this medicine that might even come from your culture of origin versus a white person where it didn't come from that culture of origin, and you will have easier access and, you know, less fear of what will happen in the legal system? So that's something that's important to name and talk about. And then the other thing that I think is very important to name and talk about is the way that misuse and addiction and drug addiction plays out in the queer community. We are at way higher risk. It's a 30% higher risk of queer community than straight community when it comes to substance abuse. And to me, the reason for that is very obvious. Queer people are up against a lot more oppression and are experiencing a lot more harm by society and are experiencing a lot more trauma based on their marginalized experience. And so queer people are oftentimes turning to self-medication or turning to substance use as a way to numb out or try to heal themselves. And what that can look like is actually addiction and harm and self-harm. And so something that I think is very important to talk about is also the shadow side of anything, right? I think when there's a struggle, you know, what's unfortunate about the way our society is we've kind of gone in this binary way of being like, all drugs are bad, make them illegal. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, that's just not true, because you have clinical trial studies happening right now that are proving that MDMA used in a therapeutic session is helping to cure PTSD. So, you know, the massive fear that we placed and created around drugs and created a whole drug war and all of that, it's like, that's actually been a huge disservice. And in the meantime, it's like, I feel like what's happening now is in the effort for the psychedelic movement to legalize and to be able to say, hey, these medicines can be helpful, I think it's hard to also talk about the shadow side, right? It's very hard to talk about the shadow side if your main goal is to promote the positive side. Because we live in this weird culture where it's like, oh, you want something to be legalized? Please only tell me the positives. Don't tell me the shadow, because we need to push the agenda through. And for me, I'm like, well, there has to be a way to be nuanced enough to say, yes, there's medicine here. There's healing here. There's something very important here. Psychedelics can be used for mind expansion. It can be used to create more love. It can be used to create healing. It can be used to heal marginalized experiences and experiences of oppression. And it can be used to cure PTSD. And right, there's a whole other world that is happening, and specifically in queer community, drugs can be misused. These same things can be misused. There can be harm. There can be drug addiction. And we need to talk about that and work on that. And also, people can have psychedelic challenging journeys. And if you don't have the right set and setting, this can be a devastating experience. And we need to name that and talk about that. So set and setting means, what is your mindset going into the experience? What is the setting around you? Who are the people around you? Where are you physically? And the work that I'm doing right now is, we've launched a new queer initiative called the Queer Dome. And Queer Dome is queer-centered psychedelic harm reduction. So a lot of times queer people are experimenting, exploring in a recreational setting. Where do you go if you end up with a challenging journey? Where do you go if you're on psychedelics and it's not working? Where do you go if the set and setting is way off and you're now in danger? So what the Queer Dome is a literal safe space, an actual dome that you can enter with trained people who will sit with you. They're called sitters, and they are trained, and they will sit with you and be with you and sit with you through that challenging psychedelic journey and make sure that you come out on the other side, and make sure that you come out okay, and make sure that you come out better, and sit with you and be with you in that experience. And to me, this is something that we have to have. It's very important. And so the launching of the Queer Dome, it's happening now. So we've never had a Queer Dome before, and we're launching this year at Burning Man, which is a huge 70,000 person festival in Black Rock City, Nevada. I've been burning for 15 years. I run an amazing theme camp called Gender Blender. Gender Blender is a theme camp designed to be a safe space for trans and non-binary people, and a place for all people of all genders to come and explore and experiment, a place for everything, like kings, queens, people of all genders, trans people, non-binary people, everything under the umbrella of gender expansion and liberation. Gender Blender, for the past 11 years, has been building community and teaching liberation and running anti-oppression trainings and hosting amazing parties. And we're teaming up and collaborating with another queer camp called Comfort and Joy that's been around for about 15 years. And our two camps are collaborating this year to launch the Queer Dome. And we're going to be on Playa this year, and we're still recruiting volunteers to help be sitters. And we are in this amazing process of raising money. We're about halfway to our goal of raising money. And I would love it if people want to support this vision. And the way to do that is, you can go to GoFundMe/QueerDome, QUEERDOME, GoFundMe.com/QueerDome is the way to donate money to this, so that we can have our actual dome and have it look beautiful inside, and make sure that we have all of our physical resources in place so that we can run this amazing queer-centered psychedelic harm reduction. And we are still looking for volunteers this year at Burning Man to be sitters and to help make this camp a reality. And people can do that by going to facebook.com/QueerDome and signing up there. We have a whole application form for people to apply to be volunteers.
Wow, that is so amazing. Yes, please like it on Facebook and share it out, everyone. I wish that when I was at the Burn in 2017, I wish I could have visited the Queer Dome and even helped out, because it's so critical to for someone to, when they think about where they could go, like, there's Zendo and Zendo's great, but like, maybe you feel more comfortable in a space where you're almost certain that the person sitting for you is going to understand the complexity of your gender or whatever, that's going to affirm your experience. That's great.
Yeah, this is why we're placing it in the heart of the gayborhood. It's going to be a sub camp of comfort and joy, so that people are very familiar with that location on Playa. We're at 745 and D this year. And so this is, it's the center. It's, Gender Blender and Comfort and Joy are sharing a border. And this is going to be like right there, so that people will know exactly where to go. And there really needs to be a queer space. Where this came from is, I've been running a workshop called Drugs, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And this is a workshop where people really get the opportunity to talk about both the highlights and the amazing parts, but also the shadow side. Mm. And in that process, at the end of every workshop, I would ask participants, what is your call to action? What do you want to see? What do you feel like the community needs? And at the end of every workshop, people would say, we need a queer Zendo. We need our own version of what Zendo is doing, because we as queer people, we're not going to Zendo. We don't quite feel comfortable there. And so I thought to myself, wow, this is a unique moment that I can actually help make this vision a reality. I can help make this call to action a reality. And I feel deeply appreciative to the people of Zendo, to the work that they've already done, the groundwork that they've already done. We're going to attend their training this year on Playa, so that we also can have the same training. They really have an amazing and wonderful model, and I appreciate all the work that they've already done to create harm reduction around psychedelics. And I feel like that this can only grow, right? This is just an extension of, and we hope to be in deep collaboration with them. So I feel thankful for the work that's already existed. And I feel like I heard the call from the queer community saying, we really need this. And we're able to finally do it this year. And it's going to happen. And it's in the works. And I feel so excited about all the volunteers that are coming forward. I feel grateful to everyone that's been donating money. I feel really hopeful that more people will donate on the GoFundMe, and that more people will sign up to volunteer, so that we can just really have this powerful, beautiful experience of working with people who are having challenging psychedelic journeys, and working with the queer community to make sure that we're safe and protected.
You are about as consciousness positive as it gets, I think, Ariel.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever rest?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. I am kind of on the move a lot. That is a big part of my identity, is being on the move. And I just want to say, though, that I do think rest is really important. You have to spend time rejuvenating. And rest is actually built into my culture in terms of being Jewish. We really have this beautiful holiday that happens once a week that's called Shabbat. And it's literally the day of rest. And it's a time to gather with your family, your community, to take a break from certain aspects of what's happening. And it's also the concept of Shabbat is actually really rooted in this concept of Tikkun Olam, which is the concept of repairing or healing the world. And Shabbat is kind of like this day that you imagine what it would feel like if the world was healed. And so to me, rest is important, because it also gives you the space to imagine what is possible in this world.
Wow. And do you have a favorite activity or practice or consciousness hack that helps you tune into yourself or to what's around you? Like, what is your consciousness hack?
I think my consciousness hack is dancing. I love dancing. I really love going out and being in community and dancing and sweating and just feeling the vibration and being with people in community. And I love wearing sparkle booty shorts and being on the dance floor. That's like my favorite thing. So for me, that's like, it does raise my consciousness, and it also connects me to community. And I've been really appreciative of my Gender Blender community and of Comfort and Joy and the kind of parties that we throw. They're very conscious raising parties. Gender Blender is about to throw our next dance and play party on August 2nd in Oakland. And that is a definite space of consciousness raising. We do this very intentional kind of, we do a very intentional party. There's a whole really beautiful beginning introduction and icebreakers and getting to know you. And there's the kind of parties that I like to throw involve ritual at the beginning, getting to know you at the beginning, icebreakers, and then evolving into dance and liberation and freedom.
Wow. Thank you so much. Any last words or any last messages for the people?
Yes. If people have any interest in following the work I do, please go to shinediversity.com or genderillumination.com. Through that website, you can get to Gender Blenders. And you can also please donate on GoFundMe/QueerDome or check out Facebook/QueerDome. Please donate. Please volunteer. Please be part of the work that we're doing. And I look forward to people keeping in touch with me. And I really love teaching and doing workshops. So I hope someone hears this and brings me to their community to bring shine. And I feel very thankful to have been on this radio call with you.
The Psychedologist is Consciousness Positive Radio. Find us everywhere podcasts are hosted. For more information, visit us on Facebook or online at thepsychedologist.com.